is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
My type of client is going to want to be a great member of not just their team, but their university. They're going to want to be somebody that's going to leave an impact there on that campus for years to come. And I'm going to want to work with that coach to make sure that everything we do aligns with their principles.
Justin Brantley is the founder of Helium Sports and Entertainment Marketing, where he helps athletes build their brand beyond the field of competition. Brantley is a student athlete NIL advisor and has spent the last decade cultivating, developing, and marketing student athletes, athletic programs, and corporations of all sizes. Justin previously served as the academy director at Spire Institute in Geneva, Ohio, hoping to create one of the most popular and recognizable brands in high school basketball. Prior to his tenure at Spire, Brantley served as the National Scouting Director at NCSA Athletic Recruiting, where he assisted thousands of families in navigating the recruiting process. As a high school athlete at St. Martin de Porres High School in Detroit, Michigan, Justin utilized the sport of football to earn his education at the University of Illinois and Howard University. After a brief stint in professional football, he transitioned to coaching and student athlete development and began working with athletes from youth to the professional levels. Hey Hoopheads, check out the Triple Threat sales event this September from our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. They're offering $3,000 off their All-Star Plus machine, $1,000 off their Dr. Dish home machine, and $100 off their IC3. Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Andy Winters, head men's basketball coach at Otterbein University, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
If you're looking to improve your coaching, please consider joining the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Follow us on social media at hoopheadspod on Twitter and Instagram, and be sure to check out the Hoopheads Podcast Network for more great basketball content. Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Grab your notebook and learn more about the NIL landscape as you listen to this episode with Justin Brantley from Helium Sports and Entertainment Marketing.
Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, but I am pleased to be joined for the third time, Justin. Third time. Justin Brantley from Helium Sports and Entertainment Management. Justin, welcome back, man.
Thank you for having me. I mean, when you say third time, it makes it seem like I'm a favorite guest or something. So it makes me feel kind of special.
You're right up there, man. There's not a lot of guys that have been on three times. So you're getting up there into the upper echelons of Hoopheads pod guestdom. So for people who haven't maybe listened to some of your earlier episodes, I wanted to just give you a chance to give people a quick background, a minute or two, just on kind of how you've got to where you are. And then we're going to dive into some of the things that you're doing around NIL. But let's just go back and give people an idea of how you got here.
Absolutely. So for me, I like to say I'm the example of following your shot and rebounding on your misses. And that's the way that I kind of culminate my career. It just so happened a lot of things just didn't go right. And I call it God's timing. When it was time for things to come together, they have. I've spent time in pretty much every single role you can think of within the sports industry, from the player side of it. I played football at University of Illinois and then Howard University, to the strength and conditioning and player development side, to the recruiting side, and then to the front office side, being the athletic director at Spire Academy. It's a little bit different than your standard director role, right? Most athletic directors are worried about scheduling buses and games and managing a budget, where we had a lot more on our plate there. So really just have spent a lot of time in a lot of different roles that uniquely prepared me for my current role. I'll say my degree, my background educationally, was in business marketing, and that's always been a staple of everything that I've done. And I look back on it and I think back to being a kid and my mom telling me, hey, sports isn't going to last forever. You have to find something else. You have to, have a plan B. And for me, my plan B was just another way to make my plan A work. And, always wanting to be involved in sports in some way, shape, form, or fashion, and really falling in love with the marketing side of things, and the way that that affects and impacts not only the game, but the intersections within sports and entertainment, the intersections within sports and culture, sports and fashion. If you look close enough, you'll see the athletic imprint on everything throughout life. And I enjoy being able to help tie those together and tell those stories. So I fashion myself as the chief storyteller of Helium Sports Entertainment Marketing, but I wear many, many hats and just enjoy being able to work with student athletes and help them reach their goals and dreams.
All right, let's start here. My first question is, when you heard that NIL was going to be coming online and you looked at it and said, hey, maybe there's an opportunity from a business standpoint for me to get involved in this, what were your initial thoughts about what you considered it might look like? And then we can kind of think about how maybe it's different than what your original thoughts were.
Yeah, I mean, to be completely honest with you, when I first heard about it, I hated it. And I think that part of that is, just the era that I come from. I come from an era of athletics where you did exactly what your coaches told you to do, and you were excited for the opportunity to be there. I joke with some of my coach friends, and we talk about how, nowadays they talk about playing hard as a skill, when for us it was a prerequisite to even, make the team. You had to play hard. That was a given. So when I first heard about NIL, the old man in me, was not a fan and didn't like it and didn't like the idea of it. As it started to warm to me, I started to think about things a little bit more on a holistic level. On the micro level, I thought back to teammates of mine that I had at University of Illinois. And, I'll tell you, I've never, had or never wanted or needed for anything my entire life. My parents worked very hard and did a great job providing for us. But I did have teammates that, if it wasn't for, being able to eat at the CAF or the team issued gear, they wouldn't have a whole lot. And to walk into Memorial Stadium in Champaign, Illinois, and see 70,000 plus fans, in the stands, and see, people visiting the student store and buying jerseys, and see how many people are paying for parking and hot dogs and whatever, and this multi-million dollar economy and ecosystem that's built around these athletes that don't have an opportunity to capitalize on any of that. It's something that makes you think a little bit, right? And I actually did an interview. My best friend, Cam Buckner, state representative in Illinois, he was influential in getting the bill passed in the state of Illinois, the NIL bill into law. And we did an interview, and he kind of changed a lot of my perspective and perception on it, reminded me of some of those feelings, reminded me of what it was like being on campus and being in that setting and seeing some of those guys who, you know, were essentially the employees of the business that weren't being paid. And, you know, we had a very deep conversation. From that, I decided to do a whole lot more research. And over that first year, it was a lot of research and a lot of time really just figuring out what's missing within the space, how I feel like we can impact and help the space without allowing it to become a money grab or become a situation where it's just all about, hey, who can give me the most money or who can give me, you know, what deal looks best financially. And that's kind of how we've built our model and built our company. You know, we're not worried about the biggest deals or the most money. Obviously, you know, we have to keep the lights on, and obviously our players are looking to make money. But we take it from an approach of we're looking at the long-term game plan and identifying what our individual student athletes' goals are and how can we help them reach their goals, you know, first and foremost on a playing perspective, right? Because, you know, most of our guys, I'd say the vast majority of them, they want to be pros. And they have a pretty good shot at it. So how do we make sure that we're building their brand on a holistic overall level? So it's more marketing and less NIL, what we're doing. And I love that approach to it. And I love the clients that we have. You know, we have 18 clients on roster currently as of today, with a couple more that we're talking through some deals with to get them on board. But all of them have that same approach. They're all thinking the long term. They're not focused on, you know, the dollars that they can make today.
So when you think about the long term, what does that mean when you start talking about building a brand that's about more than just grabbing a deal today, but it's about setting them up for their future, not just as a college athlete, but hopefully, as you said, as a pro athlete? How does that approach work, or how do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I think long term is subjective, right? So being in the business as long as I've been in the sports business for 15 years now. I've had the pleasure of working with multiple players that have gone on to play at the NBA level, gone on to play at the NFL level. And I tell people, you know, almost 9 times out of 10, you know, right? Like, you see a kid, you know if he's got that opportunity. There's certain things that you know, can immediately, you know, determine. There's other things you can't measure, right? And you can't determine what life circumstances might come their way to derail them. But a lot of times, you know. So when you're looking at a guy that you feel like has pro potential, the long term is more about brand protection. It's more about how do we build a sustainable brand? How do we put ourselves in a position where, you know, companies that align with their particular goals or particular the overarching vision that they have for their brand, them understanding that they are themselves a small business, if you will, and they have to grow and build a brand. And the stronger that brand is built right now, it will impact what opportunities exist for them down the road. So that's one way of looking at the coin. The other way of looking at the other side of the coin is you have guys that, yeah, they may say to you, Coach Justin or JB or however they communicate with me, I want to be a pro. And you're looking at them and you're saying, okay, I'm not going to tell this young man the statistics or the numbers game that they're playing and the chance that they probably won't be a pro, but I'm going to talk them through, you know, how we can prepare them for what it looks like if they're not a pro and how they can be a professional in life. So, you know, I have a young man I absolutely love, Cruz Davis, who, you know, I think he's got a shot, right? Like, he's playing at Iona. He's playing with Rick Pitino, one of the greatest coaches of all time. When I first met his father, when I first got to know the family, they talked about him wanting to be a lawyer. So for me, the conversation that I'm having with Cruz and with his family is, hey, it's a slow and steady process. And the reality is, let's say you don't make it to the NBA. You know, worst case scenario, we're able to set aside some money to put you in a position where you can have something set aside to pay for law school, right? Like, over the course of these next 4 years, being able to set that goal in our head of, hey, this is the cost of law school. How can we chip away at that with NIL opportunities? And I think that that's the way that I look at it. That's the way I look at NIL. It's not, you know, everybody hears those buzzword, hey, this player's getting X million and this and that and the third. Those are unicorns. That's not happening every day. And it's few and far between.
So that was my next question. I think when you hear the conversation in the general public, there's obviously a clear difference between if you're a starting member of the Kentucky Wildcats basketball team or you're the starting quarterback at Ohio State. Clearly, there's going to be plenty of NIL opportunities for you. There's going to be plenty of companies lining up to align themselves with big-time athletes at big-time schools. And I think where people sometimes get confused or when they wonder is, well, what does that look like for a player who's at a lower level of Division I, let's say as a basketball player, as a football player? And when you, as a brand marketer, when you're looking at where are we going to find the types of deals that are going to enable our athletes to build the type of brand and image that we want, where do you go? How do you start to cultivate those relationships with businesses that may be interested in working with your clients?
Yeah, I mean, I think that to the majority of the public, they don't understand that, to me, NIL is the great equalizer. And what I mean by that, there's opportunities. I've seen tennis players, women's tennis players at small schools making great money. I've seen gymnasts are making some of the most per ad revenue of anybody in the entire country. So, you know, obviously, yeah, you have the starting quarterback at that blue blood or power five program. He's gonna pull in the big bucks. But I think across the board, you know, it's some of those other sports, those ancillary sports, those non-revenue generating sports, that there's more sponsor opportunities and more value there. So I see NIL as an equalizer, right? You know, you have student athletes who comes out of three things, right? Name, image, and likeness. This is what I try and explain to every client I work with. If you build those three things, if you make those three things valuable, it doesn't matter where you play at, right? If you have a name and people recognize that name and they know who you are and you've built a brand, you know, while you're in high school or while you're, you know, navigating the early stages of college and you're a household name wherever you may be, there's going to be an opportunity to monetize that. There's going to be an opportunity to leverage that. And those opportunities may exist on campus or, with companies that, and, you know, I'm not afraid of giving away some secrets here, but one of the first things I look at is who's advertising at that school. So if a company is already buying ad, you know, they have ad spend there at the school, whether it be in the stadium, whether it be in the arena, whether it be just on campus, they're going to want to maximize that ad spend, right? Like how do they want to get more bang for their buck and make that make sense for them? Or, you know, local businesses or, you know, businesses that alums have started that they frequently give back and are involved with the university. That's one side of the coin. The other side is, you know, where these kids come from. You know, I always laugh. Back in the day, we would tell our players or my clients when I was navigating the recruiting world, say everybody's the man in their hometown. You know, what happens when you get on campus and you're staring at the man from his hometown? Now, all of those accolades and all of that, you know, five star and all of that goes out the window and now you just have to play. Well, in this situation, when you're the man from your hometown, you can monetize on that, right? Like you can utilize that built-in ecosystem that you've created, that built-in client base, if you will, if we're looking at it from a small business perspective, and you can do different things within your home community for people that want to support you. So there's many opportunities. It just comes down to, are you prepared for those opportunities? And quite frankly, I think the majority of high school athletes are not prepared for it. I look at, you know, what they're doing currently on social media. Have they grown their social? Are they looking at it preparing for the next 5 years, or are they looking at it for the next 5 minutes and they want to get as many likes as they can, so they're posting and they're taking stuff down, or, you know, they're putting things in their close friends and things like that, that, you know, a brand can't even look and see the type of impressions you get, or, you know, the type of engagement you're getting on your post because you're taking everything down a day after posting it. So there's different things that, you know, we advise our clients, and I talk with my clients about just the educational side of it and building a brand. And quite honestly, I have an amazing partner. My wife is probably one of the smartest people I've ever encountered when it comes to understanding social media and understanding how to build a brand online. So she lends a lot of expertise and knowledge to that to that side of the coin. And, you know, she's done business, you know, not just in the U.S., but internationally as well. So, you know, when we have clients and players that might end up playing overseas, you know, she's able to help create that blueprint and give us kind of the idea of what this thing's going to look like 3, 4, 5 years from now.
Let me ask you about high school athletes and the way they're using social media. When you think about the mistakes that high school athletes are making in terms of marketing themselves, building their brand, preparing themselves for college and beyond, what's a couple mistakes that you see them making that maybe for high school coaches who are listening that may want to be able to share with their own athletes? Hey, here's something that you could do to make your social media image better, to get make your accounts more beneficial to you in the long run. What are some things that they should avoid, and maybe what's one or two things that they should do to improve their accounts?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing that they should not do that I'm seeing a lot of is a lot of people tend to think, if he hears this, and if he hears this, this isn't a slight by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, we're seeing guys like Gary Vee be authentically themselves on social media, and they can cuss and they can say whatever it is they want to say, and people love it, right? Gary spent the last 2 decades building a brand going back to the AOL days, right? Like, he's at a point where, you know, we always joke about, you know, somebody having FU money, and that's kind of where he's at, right? Like, he can say and do whatever he wants, where these high school kids can't. You know, they can't say whatever they want to say. They can't, you know, have whatever music playing in the background of their posts, because the reality is a lot of the people that they're trying to appeal to don't listen to the same music that they listen to. They're not of the same culture. They just don't really, you know, align with that. And these brands, especially these national brands, they're spending time doing research on these people that they're potentially going to do an NIL deal with. Nobody wants a person to bring their brand into ill repute, or have somebody look at them from a different, you know, lens that isn't what they desire or intend. So if you're operating a certain way, you close off a lot of the opportunities and you put yourself into a small box. And yeah, if you have 4 or 5 million followers, then who cares? But if you're at 4, 5, 6 thousand followers, you need every opportunity possible. So I'd say the first piece of advice that I'd give to, you know, any student athlete is, if you wouldn't sit there and say it in front of your grandmother, and maybe I'm looking at it differently because my grandmother was, you know, very stern and she'd hit you quick. But if you wouldn't say it in front of your grandmother, you shouldn't say it on social media. I think that that's kind of the first, you know, step. The other side of the coin, what they could and should be doing is they should have, and unfortunately, I'm not able to do this because I didn't think about it. You know, I didn't know what I know now, but they should have the same username across all channels, and it should be their first and last name. Again, we go back to name, image, and likeness. They need to own their name. So being able to say at Justin Brantley on all channels, that's valuable. And if you're in a position where you can do that and you can start to build a brand and build a consistent, you know, every time somebody type something in, they're going to see all of my socials. If you're able to do that, that's big time. So those are some of the key things that they could and should be doing to just the very basics to start to build that brand.
I want to go back to what you said. That's a really good answer. And I think it's one of those things that it seems like when you and I are talking, that seems like common sense. But unfortunately, we know that one, a lot of times 15, 16, 17 year old kids, you do something quick, rash that you're not really thinking about. And as we know, that stuff sticks with you and it's hard to erase. So if you can get it right from the beginning, I think you're a lot better off. I want to go back to what you said about athletes being able to capitalize on things in their hometown. When you look at hometown opportunities, I think one of the things that jumps into my mind all the time is, could all those athletes, no matter what your sport is, could you come back to your hometown and run a camp? Have you seen athletes, are you working with any athletes that are running camps back in their hometown, no matter what the sport?
Yeah, you know, I think that that's a major piece of the puzzle is the camp opportunities. I think that the issue with that is not necessarily the idea. One of the things that I say to my team all the time, and when we talk about different ideas that we'd like to do, the ideas are free, right? Like, we all have them. It's what do we have the capacity to execute? And I think that for a lot of these student athletes, they don't have the people in their circle to help them to properly execute. And running and executing a camp, as you know, it's not easy. It can be expensive. It takes a lot of time, a lot of planning, a lot of organization. If you have a team around you that's going to give you the wraparound resources that can provide photographers and videographers, can provide the ability to try and sell some sponsorships or ad sales to whether it be a free camp or whether it be a paid camp, to run marketing and make sure that there's people there, to do community relations and make sure that the coaches know, the high school coaches know, and the middle school coaches know what you're doing. There's a lot of moving pieces that need to happen. I think the camps are probably, in my opinion, the best idea. And because, especially if you're a player that has that hometown following, but also relatively local when it comes to college. These are fans that are coming and watch you play. These are fans that are going to follow you on social media. They're going to remember that time. You may not remember. They're going to remember when you high-fived them when they were in third grade. And we see that all the time now, right? Like, you look at all these guys that are in NBA currently, NFL currently, and you see the pictures that they have from, hey, I was in third grade and I went to such and such camp. And, I never forgot that. And that's what made me want to be great. For me, it's more about legacy building than revenue building. So without a doubt, I would recommend for every single student athlete, whether you're at Division I or NAIA, to think about running a camp, but you have to insulate yourself with a team that's able to execute that and doesn't hurt your brand by running that camp, if that makes sense, right? Like, you're hosting a camp and there's three people there, and right. You drop the ball and the t-shirts have iron-on letters that are falling off during the camp. There's some minimal things that need to happen, but without a doubt, camps are a great opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, that if you can execute it well, it's just like anything else, right? If you can execute it well, it's going to end up being something that can be a positive. As you said, you're leaving a legacy, you're giving back in your community in addition to whatever revenue you can generate from that. So to me, that seems like a no-brainer. But as you said, it's a no-brainer if you have the right group around you that can help you to facilitate that and make sure that you're putting a quality product out there for people to be able to participate in. If it's not well run, it can do the exact opposite and damage your brand and make people think, oh, what's this guy trying to do here? It's not going to work out quite as well. So I think if you have the right team, as you said, that's a really good point that you just made. How much contact, Justin, do you have with the coaching staffs at the schools where your athletes are from? Are those conversations that you think are required? Are they conversations that aren't required? Is it some schools want to talk to people who are involved in the representation? Just how's that work, the relationship between someone like yourself and the college coaches? Because I know from talking to a lot of college coaches that they're still trying to figure out, and kind of everybody's trying to figure out how to navigate it with the best interest of the student athlete in mind, but also trying to see how that impacts their program and what they're trying to build out on the court or on the field. So just what's your relationship like with college coaches?
Yep, and I had to chuckle a little bit because I felt like me answering this question might get me in a little bit of trouble, because I do have an answer for you. But the reality is I am pretty well media trained and I know how to spin it. But I will say, I think that relationships with the coaches is paramount. In my career, I know a lot of these guys, a lot of the guys that I'm working with and talking and dealing with. Never once have I had a college coach call me and say, hey, Justin, I want you to represent this player. That has not happened, and I'm glad that it hasn't happened, because I want guys to want to be with us and not feel like they're being forced or pushed by, their coaches. So I appreciate, I've gotten a lot of support from my friends that are coaches, and that support has been more in the terms of, motivation or conversation or let's talk about NIL. I'll say probably the two best interactions I've had, surprisingly, they're Michigan State guys. Dwayne Stevens, he's now the head coach at Western Michigan. Prior to me working with Jackson Kohler, you know, he was the first phone call I made. You know, I've known Dwayne for a while. I have the utmost respect, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, him and his staff and Coach Izzo knew. And you know, Dwayne kind of, you know, let me know, hey, you know what, there's some things in the background going, and I might not be here, but here's the guy you need to talk to. And then when he got the job at Western Michigan, you know, when I spoke to and decided to work with B. Artis White, you know, I text him and we got on a call, and it was late at night, but we had a very, very good conversation, and the conversation circled back to what's best for the student athlete. They know that I'm never going to do anything that's going to put their program in harm's way. Because the respect that I have for them, right? Like, I understand more than anybody, or not, I wouldn't say more than anybody, but I understand more than most that they're doing a job on a daily basis and their family's relying on them to do their job and to do their job well. So I don't want to be the person that makes their job more difficult. So I think that transparency and that communication is key. I will say that, you know, I've had situations where coaches have not been helpful. And kind of looked at it as a negative thing and kind of, I wouldn't say told their players not to do it, but, you know, kind of pushed them in another direction or, you know, advised them not to really pursue the opportunities. And my takeaway from that, my response to that was, at the end of the day, you want somebody in the student athlete's ear that understands the holistic side of things and is taking an approach that isn't focused just on money, especially if you're at a low major or mid-major school. Because we saw it with, you know, a player this year he transferred to, and I'm not gonna say where he came from or what school he went to, but the big thing was he left this school to go to that school for the money, right? And if you don't put your student athletes in a position where they feel like, not necessarily saying they're getting every dollar or they're getting everything that's available, but they feel like they are being heard and they feel like they have representation, they feel like they have people around them that just want what's best for them, they're less likely to listen to a booster or, you know, somebody back home, you know, whether it be an AAU coach or a high school coach or a friend or whoever, saying, hey, man, like, why are you over there when you can go over here and get X, Y, Z? And we all know that it's happening, right? Like, it's part of the landscape. So, you know, my conversation to all of the coaches that I work with and deal with is, I want us all to be on the same page. I want us all to be honest and transparent, know what's going on, know what our ultimate goal is, what our vision is. I'm not signing an athlete that comes to me and says, JB, I don't care what deal it is. I just want all the money. Like, I'm not concerned with the long term. I want the money right now. That's not my type of client. So with that being said, my type of client is going to want to be a great member of not just their team, but their university. They're going to want to be somebody that's going to leave an impact there on that campus for years to come. And I'm going to want to work with that coach to make sure that everything we do aligns with their principles. I'm going to want to make sure, and you know, I've got that great relationship, Garrett Burningstool, he's on staff with Michigan State. Before I do anything with Jackson, anytime an idea comes up that somebody pitches something and say, hey, we want Jackson Kohler for this, I'm immediately reaching out to him and saying, hey, what do you think about this? Before I even pitch it to the student athlete, right? Like, I want to make sure that the team and the coaching staff is on board and understands what we're doing. And it's something that they agree with. So I think that the relationship, the 360-degree relationship is paramount. I think it's probably the most important piece of the puzzle is that transparency and honesty. Unfortunately, you know, we know that's not always the way of our business. And when I say our business, just the sports business period. But ideally, that's what I would like to see more of. I would like to see, you know, not necessarily the coaches getting in the middle and telling the kids where who they can work with and can't work with, but, you know, a just an ecosystem where everybody's on the same page and everybody has an understanding of what the goals are, and they're able to move forward to reach those goals.
So I think there's two things that jump out to me there. One is, I'm guessing that the coaches that you mentioned that are kind of hesitant about it, that said, I don't know if you want to do that. I think coaches, my guess is that those coaches are just sort of, it's new. They're not sure what to make of it. And therefore, they're kind of like, just stay away from that. But to your point, and I think to anyone who's looking at the landscape, this cat is out of the bag. It's not going away. So for any coach to kind of put their head in the sand and think that they can hide from it, I think is a mistake. I think you're much better off trying to do what you did, which is educate yourself, figure out as much as you can about it, and then do whatever you can to help your athletes to maximize their experience with NIL, which again, as you said, is not about grabbing every last dollar, but it's about how can we do this in such a way that it benefits the student athlete, it benefits the company that they get involved in, and it benefits the greater program. And I think if you can do that, which eventually is where I think all schools would like to get to, which is going to be a process clearly, but I think that's where we want to get to. And so when I look at that, and I'll ask you as somebody who's much more involved in it than I am, do you see eventually, and I'm sure, especially at the big Power Five schools, that this is, if it's not already in place, it's going to be in place very, very soon. I think at the lower levels, eventually it's going to end up there where every school is probably going to end up having an NIL expert, an NIL coordinator that's going to be part of their athletic department staff. Do you see that coming down the pike? And if so, like how soon do you think schools are going to have those positions in place?
Yeah, 100%. I think once they figure out the budget to it, I think the majority of schools will have somebody in that type of role. And that doesn't necessarily mean that person is going to go out and seek out NIL deals for all of their players or be the sole voice of NIL. I think that's a dangerous, you know, slope to go on. And, you know, the reason why I say that, when you look at it from just a 30,000 foot view, NIL's the new currency for a lot of these student athletes. You don't want a student athlete coming to your school and he's unhappy. Like, there's a lot of reasons for a player to be unhappy, right? Whether it be playing time, whether it be homesickness, whether it be girlfriend's back home and I miss her, whether it be, you know, academic, whatever the case may be. There's so many, we're dealing with teenagers, right? Like, we're not getting them enough money to be added to the equation, right? So for me, if I'm in that coach's position, if I was a head college coach right now, yes, I want somebody on my staff that's knowledgeable and they can answer those questions when they're brought to us. They can, you know, kind of review those deals and make sure everything makes sense. But I also want my guys to have a resource that they're working with independently of our program. And I'd like to vet that resource. I'd like to know that that resource has the right intentions in line. But I want to be able to have that separate from what we're doing as a program, right? Like, my job is to coach and develop you as a young man on and off the court. And that does, part of that does flow into marketing and branding and building your overarching brand. But have a resource that's helping you to identify the money side of things. And we can help you with that, right? Like, we can hand you additional resources, whether it be, you know, the collectives. And you're seeing that a lot of the big schools, they have collectives. And, you know, we have these boosters that are willing to work with these, whatever the case may be. But I think having a little bit of separation there allows the coaches to focus on coaching and that staff to do what they do best. And NIL not to become a part of that conversation when, you know, you're saying, well, why is this student athlete happy or unhappy? That's kind of my feelings on it. Everybody's going to look at it differently. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong way.
I do think it, if you have somebody on staff that becomes an expert and there's a position created and that person can help to facilitate and educate the student athletes, to me, there's no downside if it's done well. Now, clearly you can execute it poorly, but if you execute that position well and you get the right person, it seems like that would be a tremendous resource as student athletes are trying to navigate this. And also a tremendous help to the coaches who, again, like it or not, this is something that coaches are having to navigate that's completely different from the world 3 years ago where athletes can't touch any income. And now suddenly they have the opportunity to earn, again, in very few cases, but in some cases, millions of dollars as a college athlete, which was unfathomable to anybody 5 years ago. And you mentioned the collectives. I think that's another interesting piece to talk about. Maybe for people who are out there who don't understand what a collective is, maybe you can give us a quick 30-second synopsis on what a collective is, and then we can talk a little bit about how that has an impact on athletes, mostly right now at the bigger schools, as you said. It hasn't trickled down, and I think it may be a challenge to trickle down at some of the lower, the lower mid-majors type schools. But just talk a little bit about what a collective actually is for people who maybe aren't familiar with that.
Absolutely, absolutely. So before I lose my train of thought, one thing I want to touch on that you said, you talked about, you know, having that role within the team and how, you know, you don't see how it could be a bad thing. And unfortunately, you know, we've all seen the best of intentions be misconstrued, right? And the sports that are played all across the United States at the collegiate level, they're not equal opportunity sports. None of them are. You know, you don't get minutes just because you're here. It's not everybody plays, everybody gets a trophy. And the NIL market's going to be the exact same thing, right? Unfortunately, you have a lot of people on the backside of it that, you know, we're seeing an influx of entitlement in this era, in this generation, if you will. And I hate to see it in a situation where guys are comparing their checks to another, right? Like, I'm here at the same school. We have the same NIL person. Why is he getting 10 times what I'm getting? Well, he has six times the amount of followers you have. He's averaging 8 more points a game. So those are right. The conversations that you enter into in those sort of situations. Now, to touch on the collectives, a lot of programs, you mentioned it, they're mainly the high major programs. They have the resources of alumni who are invested in donating to their programs. A good example of that is Michigan State University with Matt Ishba, United Wholesale Mortgage. And he's not just focused on basketball program, even though he played basketball there. But, you know, they have guys on the football team doing ads, and it's everybody. Like, it's not something that is just held or set aside to the top player. The collectives bring a certain amount, and they're saying, hey, everybody on this team's going to get X. And what they're going to do for that X is they're going to post so many times about United Wholesale Mortgage, or they're going to show up at this event, or whatever the case may be. You know, they'll do this signing. They'll do this this appearance. So that's what the collectives are. They're a group of, you know, business owners, or they were designed to be a group of business owners and alumni that, you know, have an interest in the university, and they want to make sure that their student athletes are getting the best of opportunities. And they're willing to put their money where their heart is. And so that's the way that I see the collectives. I know a lot of people, you know, have this this perception of the collectives being the boogeymen that are coming together to put together the package to get that top player. And that's not really what it is. You know, what it is, it's people that care about and respect and love their program. And they're finding resources to make sure that those student athletes are compensated, not just the top players, but, you know, the players throughout the entire program.
And I think what that goes back to your comment right before we started talking about collectives, where it's not always equal, where if you're a starter, you're probably going to have more opportunities in NIL than someone who's not getting very much playing time. And that goes to coaches. And I think when you hear hesitancy from coaches, I think they worry about the fact that you don't have, that it's not equal. And coaches understand why it's not equal. But what they don't want is for these outside NIL dealings to come back into the locker room. And as you mentioned, where player X is looking at player Y going, well, why are you making 10 times as much as I am when we're both here sitting in the same locker room? And so I think when coaches worry about this, I think that's where their worry is that something that never used to be a part of their program, something that they didn't have to deal with, salaries were not an issue. Not that this is a salary, but the amount of money that somebody could make was not an issue. You had enough other issues with playing time and all the things that go in with being a team. But this is just a new thing that I think coaches have had to deal with. And so when you start talking about the collective where everybody who's part of the team can share in that, I think coaches in an ideal world, they'd probably prefer that as opposed to the individual deals, just because of the potential havoc it could play with team dynamics, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, 100%, right? Like, I think that you hit the nail right on the head. And I think it just all depends, right? Like, if we're talking about high major football and basketball, we're dealing with young men that have aspirations of being in the NBA and the NFL. education is supposed to prepare you for that next step in your journey. And the education at this point and navigating through, you know, watching the starting quarterback get a $3 million NIL deal, but because you know, are a freshman walk-on, you know, you might have $35 coming your way. I mean, that's just part of the hierarchy of life and understanding and learning that, hey, you know what? If you're unhappy with your paycheck, what do you have to do? You better work harder, right? Like, that's just what it all boils down to. You know, every single NBA organization has somebody making $35, $40 million a year getting all the shots, and people have to learn how to play their role. And the ones that do, they have long careers, they make a lot of money, and they have a great living. The ones that can't separate and understand that this is a business, and sports, although it was fun for us as kids, when you get to that collegiate level, it's really, especially high major collegiate athletics, it's a business. And they have to start to understand that. And I think it goes back to everything circles back to education. And with the right people educating these student athletes and having those conversations and those direct and honest conversations of, you know what, everything's not equal and that's okay. There's a difference between equality and fairness.
Absolutely.
So you having the same opportunity to leverage your name, image, and likeness is fairness. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to be equal. And I think that having the right voices and the right people working with these young men and young women, it eliminates a lot of that jealousy and bitterness, or, you know, as they say, pocket watching. You know, it will kind of take that out of the equation if you have the education on the front end.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
All right, let me ask you this. When you meet with one of your clients for the first time and you start talking to them about NIL, and obviously every kid is different, so I'm asking you to generalize, what's their knowledge level of NIL, the marketplace, what's out there, what's realistic? Just what are those initial conversations that you have with your athletes? How knowledgeable are they about NIL in general?
Great question. Unfortunately, the majority of the ones coming out of high school are very unknowledgeable on it. And the reason being is that, you know, we are, again, so antiquated in our thinking that a lot of coaches at the high school level don't even want to talk about it. You know, they don't want to see it, you know, become legal in their state. I've heard that from so many different people. So they don't even want to have the conversation, right? And the conversation and the education is the most important part of the puzzle. Being able to educate these student athletes on the front end will save them a lot of headaches on the back end. So a lot of them aren't knowledgeable. But my guys that are at college, for example, I've got two players at Ole Miss that – you know, we've been on Zooms with you know, a representative from Morgan Stanley that I absolutely love, that's talking to them about, you know, financial planning and how to make this NIL money work for you and how to invest and all these different conversations where a lot of us think, oh, we've got to have, you know, tons of money to invest, not realizing that we could put $10,000 away now while we're in college, and 20 years from now, you know, look up and have a very nice nest egg. So, you know, a lot of those conversations need to be had, and they need to be had a lot earlier than later. It shouldn't be, you know, and I'll tell you, a lot of these colleges do a great job educating the student athletes once they get there. But, you know, at the high school level and leading into going to college, there's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of lack of education on the overarching topic of NIL, but more importantly, not even just NIL, but marketing, right? Like, how do I market myself? How do I make myself marketable? I'm so tired of having conversations with people that are comparing, you know, the NIL dollars of one player to another, and they have a fraction of their following. And they don't understand that a lot of it, from a business standpoint, from businesses that are putting up money, they don't care how good you are. Yeah, obviously that's a part of the puzzle, right? Like, you have to be good. You have to be able to play. But they're not looking and saying, okay, yes, but you're better than this player, so we're going to take you. No, they're looking at, hey, this player has 150,000 followers that reach our target market. They're converting at a rate of X. Their impressions are Y. We can make money by aligning ourselves and being in the business of this player. You over here, you haven't strategically built a brand, which is okay. You've been focused on basketball. Nobody's knocking that. But with 2,000 followers, you're not in a position to make as much money as somebody that has 10, 15, 100 times that.
Do you see the educational piece? Because I think eventually, and I know it's not there now, and I think there's probably, I forget how many states, 5 to 10 states that have officially allowed NIL at the high school level, and there's lots of others that are considering it. Do you see eventually it just becoming legal in all 50 states, NIL for high school athletes? Do you see that eventually getting to that point, just because of whether it's lawsuits or whatever it might be? You think back to a guy like LeBron when he's in high school and what he could have been able to sign in terms of NIL deals when he's at St. Vincent St. Mary. Just, do you think that eventually we get NIL in high school across the country?
Absolutely. You know, we're at 17 states as of today. That have legalized NIL at the high school level. And I think that what's going to happen is you're going to end up with a vacuum or a funnel of athletes identifying and understanding that. And not saying it's for everybody, right? Like, everybody's different. You know, I wish my 16-year-old would come to me and say, Dad, I want to move to XYZ because right. They have NIL there and we don't have it in Michigan. I'm going to look at him like, dude, you better focus on algebra. But, you know, we're going to see a situation where top talent is going to start to identify and understand, hey, I can go to California, or I can go to Colorado, or Washington, D.C., or I can go to New York, or I can go to Utah. And I mentioned those states specifically because all of them have prep school options. All of them have, you know, historically known basketball programs that student athletes typically flock to. So for all the guys that are already fighting and kicking and screaming, and, you know, there were articles that were written about, you know, us when we were at Spire and us pulling players out of the state of Michigan and, you know, why, da 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 da, et cetera. Well, this is just going to be another one of those situations where that top talent, that top 5%, is going to start to look elsewhere if that's not the case. And you know, I think that from a perspective of this, from the state perspective, I don't see why you wouldn't legalize it, right? Like, it's not an issue that you're going to have with every single player. Not everybody is marketable. Not everybody has a following to even get NIL. Like, what are they going to do? Get free haircuts at the local barbershop? And if that is what they're going to get, great. Why shouldn't they get that? So I think that we will see fairly soon a situation where every student athlete, whether they're in high school, whether they're in college, has the opportunity to utilize their name, image, and likeness. And with that, we'll see more universal education on sports marketing and on building a brand and how to build the brand. My fear with that, right, because there's a pro and a con to everything, my fear to that is, you know, we're going to lose the focus on player development and end up with a focus on brand development. Families will be in a situation where, you know, and not everybody, but maybe a family is, you know, a lower income or middle income family, and they have, you know, $5,000 disposable dollars that maybe a year ago they would, you know, funnel towards player development, that now maybe they're going to push towards brand development because the ROI seems to be a little bigger than the player development. Now, guess what? We've chased the short term, but we've, hindered ourselves in the long term. So I think that we're going to see a lot of different things play out, unfortunately. It's like anything, right? Like every superhero, their powers can be used for good or for evil. And I just think that's going to come down to, who's guiding and navigating these student athletes, what are their intentions, and what is their ultimate goal for the ecosystem of youth athletics. I think that some of the older coaches and the guys that come from that school of thought that I was in when NIL first came, they're either going to walk away from the game because they're going to lose the love of it, or they're going to adopt and adapt a little bit. But I think that those are the ones, those voices that we need more so than anything. We can't have all of these veteran coaches quitting because they don't want to deal with this, because they're the steadying voices within the ecosystem that can say, hey, you know what? Yes, go ahead and take advantage of those opportunities, but don't let the main thing no longer be the main thing. We have to continue to develop. We have to make you a better player. Let's have Avenue A and Avenue B going at the same time, and hopefully they intersect, right? I think that that's kind of what's needed in the space, and I think that those voices and those experienced people, instead of them shaking their finger at NIL and saying, no, and hey, I'm going to quit if that happens, we need them more than ever in this situation.
And that's going to be really important moving forward, I think, not just at the college level, but when you start talking about the high school level. And you and I have seen in youth basketball and grassroots basketball how it's really possible for people who maybe don't have the best intentions with an athlete to latch themselves on to a kid that they think has promise, or to a family of a kid that they think has promise. And now suddenly they're working behind the scenes and maybe getting involved in a way that they shouldn't. There's going to be much more of a need for good education and for coaches and people like yourself who are in the business, who care about the kids that they're working with, who care about the athletes and care about more than just the dollar signs, but really want to have a positive impact. Because as you said, if you end up with a lot of people who are those steadying voices and those people who have experience, if they walk away from it and say, they just wash their hands, I don't want to deal with this, then we're going to end up in a situation where you have a lot of young athletes getting bad advice. And let's face it, when you have somebody, and I don't know, you can look back at yourself as a college student, but I know I can look back at myself as a college student, and I know I was excited when I got some meal money on the road, and sometimes, hey, I'm going to skip lunch, and if I put together a couple of these meal monies, I can go out and buy myself a pair of shoes or whatever. And you just kind of think about how just ill-equipped I was to be able to deal with something on this level, especially when you're talking about some of the bigger deals. But just as you mentioned, getting athletes financial education, talking to them about building your brand. Like, there's so many things holistically that go into helping a kid to be able to have success. And clearly, the younger and younger this goes, the more important that education piece and having adults that are looking out for the best interest of the student athletes becomes even more important. I just look at the high school piece of it, and to me, that's the biggest thing that has to happen. I think it has to happen at the college level too. But again, as you get younger and younger, you just have to make sure that the people around those athletes are making good decisions and helping that athlete make good decisions.
Absolutely. And I think that, you'll never be able to monitor who's around the student athletes. But what you can do is you can educate and arm the student athletes to prepare them for the world that's going to face them. And when you've educated them properly, you've given them all the resources and the ability to make an informed decision, you typically see less errors. So the more education, the more we could talk about on the front end versus running from it, the better we can equip our young men and women to be able to identify who's not really for them, or who's, not really coming from a place of love or a place of really wanting to see that student athlete be successful.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And it's just really has to, to me, it comes down to, you got to have the best interest of the student athlete at heart. You would hope that a parent does, although we know we've seen parents who unfortunately think they might have the best interest of their kid at heart and end up making some curious decisions that are ones that, from the outside looking in, you're like, ooh, I'm not sure that that's really a direction that you want to go. When you think about what you do with your athletes, how often are you having conversations with them? What's it look like as you're putting together a deal and you're talking to them? How often are you conversing with them? How often are you connecting with them to make sure that they know what they need to know?
Yeah, you know, I try and keep them involved from the very beginning all the way through the end of the deal. I think that that's one of the things that, you know, we want to focus on is not just the acquisition of the deal, but the execution of the deal. We want to make sure that, you know, they have the resources to, you know, if it's posts that need to be made, whatever that deliverable is as a unit, we want to be able to provide and put them in a position to be successful with that. So that, you know, whether that means, you know, 20 conversations or whether that means, you know, three or four, whatever it takes, you know, it takes what it takes. And that's kind of the mentality that I've had in the sports business. It's not just what we're getting paid for. And you know, I tell guys all the time, I didn't come into the NIL space, you know, for monetary gain. That wasn't the reason. It wasn't a, oh my God, there's money here, let's jump on this. I, at the time, and it was during our last time talking on the podcast, you know, I had my consulting firm and a lot of what we were doing was sports marketing. And it's still what we do, right? Like, that's our bread and butter. That's our focus. You know, we work with companies of multiple sizes. We work with different schools, teams, et cetera. From a marketing standpoint, that's kind of our you know, our main source of revenue, whereas the NIL is more so about, you know, working with guys that we believe in, working with guys that we enjoy, and working with guys that we want to see be successful long run. It's not just about, you know, how much money we'll make off of a deal or what that'll look like. And, you know, obviously we want to make sure that we're putting our guys in a position where they can start to reach their goals, whether that be monetary, whether that be on the field, on the court, et cetera. But more so than anything else, we want to make sure that we're educating them and we're putting them in a position of empowerment to where they're in a better place for having been involved with Helium. That's kind of my way of looking at it is, you know, I want to make sure that whenever they leave us, they're leaving us in a better place than they were when we found them.
When you talk about some of those extra things that you're providing, you talked a little bit about the financial side of it and talking to them about that, and you're thinking about the social media side of it. Are there any other things besides those two on the financial or social media side that jump out to you when I say, what other things are you providing to them in terms of education when it comes to their brand as a college athlete and then potentially their future brand as a pro athlete?
Yeah, I would say that those are the two primary things. The other is just experience, right? Being able to connect the dots and you know, get them in rooms and in conversations with guys that have been where they're at or where they're headed, and to help provide opportunities for them to be successful. I tell all of my clients, I can be here to give you as much as you need or as little as you need. If you feel like you need a lot of help and a lot of resources as you navigate through, you know, your college journey, you know, that's what we're here for. And, you know, I have a unique experience to be able to help navigate and guide you through that. So really, you know, just the wraparound resources, whether it be brand building, whether it be financial literacy, whether it be, you know, understanding and education within the market, whatever the case may be, whatever we have to do to help our clients. You know, we're not we don't have banker's hours and we don't have billable hours. You know, all of our student athletes, everything that we provide for them is included as part of our overall services to them. So, you know, it takes what it takes. Again, I say that all the time. I tell all my guys it takes what it takes. And that's kind of, you know, the mantra, you know, here. We have to check our ego at the door. It's not about what we did or what we've done in the past. You know, I literally, you know, guys always want to ask me about, you know, the time at Spire and LaMelo Ball and all that. So I'm like, I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about you, right? Like, I want to talk about, like, what this is going to look like for you. Because what I've done in the past, that's it's irrelevant in the situation. It's what can I do for you? So that's been our goal and that's been our focal point.
All right. So let's leave that past behind us. Let's look into the future and let's do it with two questions. So first part of the question, when you think about the NIL marketplace, just in general, not specific to what you're doing, but when you just look at the landscape, What do you think it looks like in 2, 3, 4 years as it continues to mature? Do you have any thoughts about what you think may or may not happen over the next few years when it comes to just the general outlook on NIL? And then I'll ask you specifically about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, you know, I think the market will be regulated. And what I mean by that, I'm not saying from a standpoint of rules and regulations. I'm saying just the market will start to kind of settle itself. You're not going to see as many high dollar deals as you're seeing currently, because it's just not sustainable. And quite frankly, there's not a whole lot of ROI for a lot of these companies that are putting out these deals. So as there's more data sets and there's more, you know, opportunities for them to kind of track and trace these deals over time, you know, month to month, quarter to quarter, year to year, you're going to see a situation where that market will stabilize a bit and they'll say, okay, this is the value. And there'll be a true setting on what the value is of a player at X school, right? Or what the value is of a player at this school. Right now, it's kind of, you know, people have their formulas. But the only people that can really answer the question of the value is the brands that are paying for it. And a lot of times, you know, they're not going to come out and tell you they took a loss, right? Like, they don't want to look stupid. But I think that you're going to see over time, history will be the judge. It'll start to align that where you'll see a lot of those big deals start to kind of fizzle out, and you'll see kind of a baseline for what it looks like and what opportunities are going to exist moving forward. I think that that's going to be the future within the next couple of years.
They got to collect their data, right, and figure out what works and what doesn't. And because it's basically a completely new industry, it's a completely new market that didn't exist before. And so I think you're right that these companies are going to be out there trying things right now. They're experimenting. They're trying to see what works. And as this thing shakes out over the next couple of years, they're going to look at it and say, okay, it's worth signing an NIL deal with player X from X school with this amount of followers on this social media. And you're going to really break it down. You're going to have the data analytics that we see so prevalent in all industries today, I think, is going to come here. And as you said, it's going to cause everything to sort of settle in, and they're going to figure out where is the best point where we can invest our money and get that ROI as you described. All right. For you personally with Helium and what you're trying to do there, as you look ahead into your future, same time frame, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, what do you hope that you're able to do with this in terms of services you're providing to athletes, in terms of the size and how many athletes you're hoping to represent? Just give me an idea of your vision of the future.
Yeah, that's a hard question, right? Because if you asked me at the beginning of this journey, you know, my wife and I, we sat down and talked, and you know, when we signed our first client, we had that conversation of what this thing looked like. And I said, well, you know, I think that we will be around 10 guys going into this first year. And, you know, we're knocking on the door of 20, you know, as the school year is just getting started. We had the conversation, and, you know, I said, well, hey, we've ran our collective businesses so far out of our home office. I think we can do that for year one. And you know, here we are, we have office space, and beautiful office space, if I must say so myself. So, you know, I try not to limit myself with too many goals or kind of points that we'd like to reach or hit or numbers or things like that. I feel like when we know, we'll know, right? Like, we're going to find our sweet spot of what works and what makes sense for us as we scale. You know, one of the things that I would like to do, and we've done it so far, we have an amazing, amazing, amazing group of people that work with us. I never like to use the phrase work for us, but work with us, and we've been able to give opportunities, and that's kind of what I look at Helium to do in the future. We've got a great kid, Max Kellner. He's 15, and I wish that I had my head on my shoulders the same way he does when I was 15. But he cold called me. We built a relationship. It's been a couple months now, but he's a junior agent for us. He's brought over some talented athletes. I mean, he's brokering deals. We're working through a deal right now that he brought to the table. So things like that. Those are the things that I look at that are exciting to me, that, you know, make me feel like we're doing the right things and we're moving in the right direction. if I can find two or three more Maxes, you know, I will be, you know, seriously, like I was texting with one of my buddies. He's an NBA scout, and we were talking about it. And I told him, I said, this kid reminds me of you. And we had a conversation about it. And he says, yeah, he says, most people wouldn't give a 15-year-old in that type of opportunity. And I'm like, why the hell not? Right. Like, you know, let's dismantle the gatekeepers. Let's dismantle the status quo, right? Like, this is new to everybody. Why not give somebody that's passionate and young and wants to do it an opportunity to come in and do it? So for me, those are the things that kind of will be in our future, is identifying the young talent that just truly loves the business of sport, and we can nurture and develop and help those guys move on to their next level. You know, I told Max when he came on board with us, I said, you know, if you stay with us forever, that means I failed you. You know, I want to prepare him to, you know, be a GM at the next level, or to join a major agency, or whatever the case may be, whatever, you know, aligns in his journey and path. But it's people like him that inspire me. That's what I look at for the next 3 years. I'm looking to scale. I'm looking to, you know, not necessarily have a ton of clients to the point where we can't manage them and we can't give them all the resources and time and attention that they deserve, but definitely, you know, having more of a national imprint, and we're doing very well. We have an office in Memphis as well. So we have a Southeast office. We have, you know, student athletes all over the country currently, but, you know, just scaling more is kind of the answer in a nutshell of what I'd say, you know, 2-3 years looks like for me. You know, scaling a little bit larger and, you know, having some great guys and girls that we're working with, that allow us to spread the message of education, that allow us to do things the way we see and we feel that they should be done. And I tell everybody, you know, I'm horseradish. I'm not for everybody, and helium's the same way. It's not going to be for everybody, but the people that love horseradish, you know, they keep a bottle in the refrigerator at all times, right? So, you know, making sure that the people that are our type of people that work for us and fit with us, we're going to align with them, and we're going to take them to the highest heights.
That's exciting, and that's fun, because what I hear you saying there is you have a two-pronged approach to your business. You're not only helping your clients, but you're also helping to develop internal talent and help people to move on, right? Just like being a head coach of a basketball team, one of your jobs, yes, is to help your players to get better and have a successful team. But if you're a good head coach, you also care about developing your staff and giving them an opportunity if they want to eventually end up and be head coaches and run their own program. Your job as a head coach is to help them to do that. And I hear you describing your business in the exact same way you're running it, just absolutely, like an outstanding head coach would do the same. So I want to wrap up here by giving you a chance, Justin, to share how people can reach out to you, how they can find out more about what you're doing. And then after you do that, I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
Absolutely. So we're looking to grow our social media presence and spend, you know, quite a bit more time and resources over the next couple months and developing the social side on Instagram, helium.sem. SEM stands for Sports and Entertainment Marketing, but helium.sem on Instagram, on Twitter, helium.sem. There is no dot, so it goes back to what I was saying about branding and being able to own your name across all channels. We weren't able to do that. So, but that's where they can find me on social media. You know, I can be emailed. I love cold emails. I tell people all the time, there may not be an opportunity today, or there may not be something that I can do for you right now, but you never know who I know or who you know, how we can be mutually beneficial to each other and growing our ecosystem. So, you know, justin@heliumscm.com. I welcome any question, no matter how complex, no matter how, you know, how basic it is. I want to make this space a better space for student athletes across the country, whether they sign with us and work with us or not. I feel like an educated client is a better client, and makes the entire landscape of NIL better for everyone. So that's kind of my approach to it. And I'm more than willing and more than happy to talk with brands of all sizes. Like I mentioned, we have 18 student athletes on roster currently. I shouldn't say student athletes because we do have a pro, but we have 18 clients on roster currently, and you know, not all of them are high major, or not all of them have a ton of followers. So you know, we have a solution for any budget. You don't have to look and think, oh man, we can't, we can't do anything within this space, or we can't, work in NIL. I'll tell all small businesses that, there's an opportunity if you really get granular and look at what your ultimate goal is. And that's kind of, we look at our agency not just as an NIL agency and not just as a marketing agency, but as a strategy agency. And we're working along with, the brands as well to make sure that we're maximizing their ad spend. I'm open to those conversations, no matter how big or how small a company is, no matter, how big or how, simple a question may be, I'm here for it.
That's exciting stuff. And knowing you like I do, I have no doubt that you're going to succeed and you're going to meet the goals that we talked about here tonight. And you're going to have a tremendous amount of success with Helium. So I want to say thanks to you again for jumping on for the third time. You're in an exclusive club here on the Hoopheads Pod. And I'm sure it won't be the last. So again, thank you so much for your time tonight, Justin. Truly appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.